Alan Kring Productions, in association with Emergent Light Studio, presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, for spring semester 2022. Today, the time value of money. Before we didn't do that, have a quick look at the numbers and then get down to it. Just to start to kick this ball off. Is this a good day or a bad day on the street? Is it a bull day or a bear day? Let me put it that way. It's a bear day. Is it a really terrible bear day, or is it just a meh, bears? Yeah, it's not anything to write home about. It's nothing to panic. This isn't a terrible day. It's just one of those days when you're in a grouchy mood, just kind of just whining and a little pissy about everything, sort of like one of those days you have with toddlers. But it's not awful. But, of course, you can see that the Dow is being very robust, obviously. It's so big. Minor bad news isn't going to cause that to go anywhere. That's insignificant. It's basically flat, 0.03%. That's a flat day on the Dow. Now, you'll see that, interestingly enough, all those spark charts were showing. If you see these right here, by the way, I think I've mentioned this before. These little tiny graphs are called spark charts. And those are something you can do in Excel. You can have data, and then you can have a little tiny spark chart besides showing just a quick snapshot. But as you can see, there was a pop at the beginning. The bulls were kind of in a mood to do something, and then they just lost their will to live, and then the bears kind of took over, and now it's just kind of sitting there looking stupid. Now, there was good news last week, unemployment and all of that, jobs, but that's old news. It's gone now, so now the market is sort of waiting to hear if there's anything, any more good news or bad news. The situation in Europe hasn't changed over the last few, over the weekend. We're seeing a buildup, so there may very well be some kind of a conflict right on the horizon. The smart money actually right now says that there won't be, but we'll see about that. Crude oil was down pretty much, but it fought its way back up. It's down just a little tiny bit, but it's still above 91 a barrel. And gasoline reserves right now are pretty strong, so you won't see an effect on gasoline for a few days. But I guarantee you, if oil does start its next run, it's aiming at 100 now, you will see the price of gasoline go up pretty substantially if that happens. So now, if you look over here, gold and silver, well, silver had a hard, strong day up. Wow. But gold and silver are both up. The metals seem to be the beneficiaries of the lack of interest in equities right now. You got money, you want to put it somewhere, stocks aren't exciting you today, so maybe throw a little bit into the metals market, see what happens over there. Now, the 10-year bond, the yield has gone down. So that means the price is up. So there's money going into bonds right now, too. So in other words, the investors are not really excited or interested in equities right now, but they are willing to toss some money at metals and at bond market. Although I have to say this is not a... Well, actually, no, that's nothing. That's 0.3 basis points. So basically, that's flat. So the bond market's down a little bit as far as yields, which means it's up a little bit as far as price goes. You're going to see more about that this week and next week as we approach the midterm week. By the way, before I forget about it, there was a glitch in the calendar. The midterm on midterm week, which starts 28th, the review is on Monday. The midterm is on Wednesday, and then go over the midterm was on Friday. I fixed it in the calendar and in the syllabus because that wasn't correct what was there before, so check that out. But anyway, as we go into midterm week, you're going to see more about this inverse relationship between price and yield. Ignoring Bitcoin, as I like to do, you see that London was actually on something of a tear. It's not a spectacular day up, but this is the first time I've seen really London have a positive day, and was positive all day over in London. The Financial Times 100 big stocks on that index did have a decent day up, and they kept going up. This wasn't just one piece of information. This was like good news making the market have an optimistic sentiment. The bulls were in charge. They weren't charging and snorting and all that, but they were in good shape. Nikkei, it had a down. It started down, and it just never went anywhere from there. This is not bad. It just means that there wasn't anything that fixed what bad news was right there. So this flat part right here, that simply means that there wasn't anything new to move the market anymore from where it was at the beginning of the day. So in other words, you, sir, at the beginning of the day, you walk outside, you stretch, and you get hit by a car. The rest of the day is okay, but boy, are you going to be bitchy all day. I don't know if that you know what I mean. You're not going to get hit by a car. Maybe by a truck, I don't know. But there you go. Enough of that for the day. Do make sure that you know how to look at the screens. I'm just curious, just real quick here. Amazon still seems to be having a strong reaction. But if you look at it, there was a surge at the beginning, and then the bears began to show their muscle. Now, technician, the elf in me would say, I see declining tops through the day. And I see kind of flat bottoms, so I'm figuring that probably any trading, you're not going to make any more out of Amazon today. It already has shown most of what it's going to do already. And even if you did, bid, holy cow, oh, okay. Yeah, the bid-ask spread is $1.60 on that, but that's on a monster cost. God, that's an expensive stock. It's not really worth too much to even try to go into something like that. But anyway, enough of that. But remember how to look at screens. In this case, Amazon's showing that it's a risky investment, very risky. Well, not very, but it's risky, and it doesn't pay a dividend. So the only way you're going to get any money out of that is through capital gains. So if you think that Amazon's just going to keep rip snorting up, Yahoo seems to think that it's going to rise over the next year by about 25% more. Do you see that? They're forecasting that from about 3,200, it's going to make it to 4,100, 20 to 25% capital gain in 1 year. Is that going to happen? It's up to you to decide whether you trust Yeehaw Finance or not. You see this calculator? The calculator says, I told you, in finance, we don't do the tables. And in my version of finance, we don't really do the formulas all that much. I show you formulas, and in some cases, the formula is so simple that it's easier to do the formula than it is to chase down the apps, finance, and all that. But for the most part, this calculator will give you what you need to know. Now, the BA2 and the BA from Texas Instruments, and HP has one as well, they'll do this too, but it's a little bit visually less accommodating to do them, and it's a little more cumbersome, all the keys you have to push to get to the different things. In this one, it's a little bit easier. And so as I do this time value of money, TVM subject, which is huge in finance, it's a big, big, big thing, I'm going to show you how to do it on this calculator as much as I can, simply because it's less likely that you'll make an arithmetic mistake. And it's more likely that I can go through a bunch of problems, just change this number or that number, and see what the effect is. Now, to do this, I should like to borrow $100 from you, and I'll give you back $100 in 1 year. What do you say? No. Well, how about if I give you $90 back? You give me $100 now, I'll give you $90 back. No. Oh, so you don't like the way the government does it. What's wrong with this? I mean, $100 is $100, you know?
But I could just keep it, like,
have my $100 now. Oh, sure. Selfish son of a dog. Yeah. You see, that's the problem, is that in finance, and I've said this before, we recognize that more is preferred to less. Now is preferred to the future. That's just the reality of how it works. Now, we can imagine that we are good people, that we are charitable, we are beneficial. We certainly, you want to make me happy, so you'll give me 100 for 90. Yes, of course you will. No, you won't, because you're a greedy son of a bitch, just like everyone else is. It's when I was in the ministry, when my brother was a gospel evangelist and I preached on his tour, there was an old evangelist who said, "We preach to their soul, we sell them to their need for alcohol." That's just the reality of it. So the greed is going to drive us to want more now. So if you have to give up that now, I have to give you a reward for giving up consumption. In other words, there is an opportunity cost to foregone consumption. We call that interest. That's what it is. It's just interest. And interest is actually just one name for something that is pervasive in the universe. Growth rate, decay rate, acceleration rate, all of those are just the same thing. Interest is just a natural phenomenon. And so in our world, we have to say that any future value is going to be the present value times 1 plus this evil thing called an interest rate compounded year over year over year. So in other words, the amount with interest in a year will be what you use to calculate the interest in the next year, the amount in the next year. That's why that's an exponent there. It's a simple formula. I mean, it's not even that hard to do it on your own, but the calculator makes it super easy, just keying it in. If you use that TVM solver, you'll find out that it's even easier. Now, the thing, though, is that this R is a periodic interest rate. And this N is the number of periods. Long ago, the world, the United States was a rough and tumble place. The greed was so pervasive, and it took that ugly turn into cruelty, lies, cheating, and all manner of other terrible things. And one of the terrible things was offering interest rates that were ridiculous. They just couldn't happen, but there were plenty of suckers who would do it. So I would say, I should like $100,000 from you, ma'am, and I will give you $150,000 back in 1 year, 50% interest. Well, you say, well, that's incredible. Yes, by golly. Well, I'd spend your money. And then what I'd do is I'd say, sir, you give me $300,000 and I will bring you back $500,000 in 1 year. Oh, okay. That's a 67% return. So then I'd give you back your money and you'd swear to God I was the greatest thing since sliced bread. And then for you, I'd have to find someone like you. I need $1 million and I will give you back $2 million in 1 year, 100% return on your investment. And then, of course, I'd take that money and I'd pay you back and spend the rest and enjoy myself. You see what I'm doing there? It's a Ponzi scheme. Okay? Those high interest rates were just not real. But they were offered all over the place. it was just common. There were no laws to stop. Well, there weren't really any laws to stop it, because back in that time, even through the 1920s, the best government was no government. Free markets can fix themselves, and that's just the way of the world. One president after another through the 1920s just sat and let the whole thing get worse and worse until it finally buckled in 1929 with the crash of the stock market, and then we slid into a Great Depression, and the president at that time, Herbert Hoover, he was so clueless that he offered stupid solutions, idiotic solutions. And finally, the best government that money could buy was no longer acceptable, and all of the rascals were thrown out. They were kicked out on their ear. And an age of reform came about. Now, this isn't reform like anything we do today. The reforms we talk about today are just laughable compared to what happened then. The new president and a new Congress came in, and that president, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, said, "The wealthy hate me, and I welcome their hatred." And so everything was changed. Securities laws were changed. Banking laws were changed. And one of those banking laws that was changed was that there was a cap on interest rates that could be offered by a bank. 5.25% is the maximum that anyone can offer in a banking environment. That was part of the Glass-Steagall Act that I've mentioned, I believe, before. Okay, well, you see, that didn't... Actually, the banks... that doesn't mean anything to us because, you see, interest rates were so low then. The government was printing money fast and furious, just like it has during this recession, printing money just to get the economy going again. So the price of money is interest rates, so supply of money goes up, interest rates go down. So this really 5.25% meant nothing to the bankers. But over time, it began to be a problem because once the money supply was not being replenished as much, there were investment possibilities people had that were not regulated, so they could offer more than 5.25%. And so the banks were saying, you know, come on, we're losing depositors to these other institutions. Okay, so the banks figured out a trick. Yeah, the law says 5.25%, but it doesn't say we can't compound that more than annually. So they said, well, it makes for a higher effective rate if we compound every 6 months, semi-annually. And it makes for an even slightly higher rate if we compound every quarter and every month. There's nothing in the law that says we can't do that. And that was the birth of the compounding. So when I say periods, say 6% compounded semi-annually for 5 years, that would mean that the N would be 5 times 2 compounding semi-annual. And the R would be 6% divided by 2. So it's 3%, but twice as many periods. So it makes for a little more money, a little more, because the exponent's overwhelming the denominator getting smaller. Okay, so if I say semi-annual, you just take the interest rate divided by 2 and the number of years times 2. Okay, don't forget to do it. And quarterly, you do 4. Monthly, which is actually one of the most common because monthly payments on loans, that'd be 12. Now, then it gets a little bit weird. How weekly would be, come on, you do know. I actually had an experience with someone who didn't know how many weeks were in a year. I've had that more than a few times during a test. Someone comes up, how many weeks are in a year? Oh, more than you could count at your level. Okay. What major are you? Political science. Yep. Okay. I didn't say that. Okay. But you can even have it like hourly. Now, there's even one that is infinite. It's a different formula. It uses that natural constant e to the RT. But, I mean, it's So you're never going to get infinite compounding. That's for very, very, very rich people. The most you can hope for is probably compounding quarterly or something like that. But yeah, there is even one for instantaneous compounding. Just don't forget, when I give you a problem, that the percent, now in the apps in the calculator, key in a percent. Okay? Don't key in a point. If you're using a formula, it's the real decimal. But if it's in the app, you use a percent. That's just the way all calculators, financial calculators are. So in other words, let's say that we have $4,000. I can use that formula right there. I can do that the future value of that, what will be there in 5 years, would be $4,000 times 1 plus 0.06 over 2 to the 5 times 2 power. And don't forget to put that in parentheses if you're going to use the formula. And I'll say just apps, finance. Oh, no, I don't want to do it. Let me do it the formula way first. Okay, I'd do 4,000 times 1 plus 0.06 divided by 2 raised to the power 5 times 2. Now, I recommend that you not try to be a hero and do math in your head. This one's an easy one, yeah? Yeah, semi-annual. Yes. It's a continuation of this problem I did here. Should have clarified that. Now, the numbers will get intense. Don't calculate this and then put it into the formula. Let the calculator carry the lift. Don't try to be a hero with your math skills. Okay, there I am. Now, the next thing is, and I've said this, I think I've said this before, your answer should make sense. If you do something wrong in finance, that exponent thing is going to blow your answer out of the water. I had a student, she got, calculating a loan payment on a car, she got a monthly payment of over $10,000. And I said, does that make sense? And she said, I don't know, my dad pays my car payment. So I just went on, thought about changing my career. Okay, watch this. Well, let me do this in here. Apps, finance, TVM solver. N is 5 times 2. Don't hit equals, just drop. The I is 6 divided by 2. The present value of it is negative. Always remember with the present value, the calculators, no matter which one it is, wants a negative for a PV. Negative $4,000. Now leave everything else alone. Don't be a fool and try to play with these. There's one place where I might do the C and change that to another number. And this is end. That will change for some of the problems we'll do later this week. Okay, now, I'm not putting any more payments in. I just want to see the future value, alpha solve. Well, butter my biscuits and call me Mr. Delicious. I got the same answer. I'll bet you never heard that one before. Now, the thing about this is that, speaking as someone who has made so many math errors, arithmetic errors in my life, and remember that I taught math at the Ohio State University for 9 years, and I messed up so many poor human souls with my bad math skills. But you see how fast this does? It just spits it out. And that allows us to do some things. Well, what would happen if it were quarterly compounding? That would be 5 times 4. And that would be 6 divided by 4. Let's see what that does. Alpha, solve. Oh, my ass. What did I do? Oh, 5 times 4. That was good. See, that's, I did that just to show you how easy. Okay. Why is it doing that? Try that one more time. Boy, that sure did ruin my example. Well, there you go. A little bit more. Do you see how that compounding trick actually juices an interest rate a little bit? We even have a way you can find the effective rate. The effective rate, in other words, what the real actual rate is going to be 1 plus the periodic rate to the number of compoundings per year. So in other words, in this case, the effective rate would be 1 plus 0.06 over 4 to the fourth power. Don't let me bluff you on a quiz or an exam. I'll give you a number of years and an amount of money. It doesn't matter. Of course, you could also do it this way. Watch this. Quit. I can do it. 1 plus 0.06, close parentheses, to the fourth power. Oh, I forgot, minus 1. Duh. Cripe. And then minus the 1. That actually didn't work out. Oh, one point, I screwed that up. Let me do that again. 1 plus 0.06 divided by 4, the periodic interest rate, to the fourth power, number of compoundings per year, minus 1, 6.13%. Notice that it's a little bit more than 6%. Now let me show you another way you can do it. Apps, finance. If you slide down here far enough, you'll find effective. 6%, comma, 4 compoundings, close of parentheses. There it is. You can do it either way, the formula, which I screwed up that first time, or you can just do the effective. And actually, unintentionally, I'm showing you that doing it with the app, you're not going to make those silly, stupid mistakes like I just did there. So for the rest of the week, I'm going to be showing you stupid pet tricks on how to answer any question that you could be confronted with. Now, there are some where Excel would probably be a better idea. We're not going to be doing those for weeks yet. For the most part, anything that's a TVM problem, a time value of money problem, this is how we're going to do it. Okay, now that's all I have for you as far as class goes. You've got a quiz. Jump in it. It should be open in just a minute. Matter of fact, right now it'll open. Other than that, that's all I have for you today. I thank you.